We have got a belting football filling for you today. We have to spend a lot of time talking about Man City Liverpool, don't we? First of all, Alexis McAllister, you cannot switch off on the front post like that. Secondly, it was a penalty, wasn't it? Come on, let's be honest. It was a simple penalty. And thirdly, what a game of football. In other news, Man United piled more misery on Everton. Arsenal snuck a massive, massive 86th minute winner. Spurs 4-0, pumping of Aston Villa. And finally, my mate, Tom Cleverley, good luck in your new job at Watford. Right, lads, we got to start with Liverpool, Man City. This game never, ever disappoints, does it? You did a watch along for it. It was edge of the seat stuff, wasn't it? It was class.
Yeah. And I think, you know, look, with Doku at the end, I was always saying that Man City could nick this. And it would have been a travesty, really, because Liverpool were so good in the second half. But I wanted a draw because it just tightens it up nice. But to be honest, even as a United fan, I was at the end of it going, Liverpool should have won that.
Yeah.
They're absolutely. And forget, we'll talk about the penalty that wasn't given, but they absolutely pasted them. And like Diaz, I mean, was it Rio last week talking about Kyle Walker being the best right back in Premier League history? I mean, he just did what I've always said. Without pace, his positional sense is terrible. And Diaz had him on toast. He just couldn't finish. And we had two massive chances. Liverpool should have won it without the penalty. That's the only thing I would say. The Jurgen Klopp's half-time talks this season, they're like a different team when they come out. And I thought they were brilliant. And look, they've got no Alisson, they've got no Konate, they've got no Trent, they've got no Robertson, they've got no Jota, they've got no Salah against Man City's strongest team. And they made Man City look ordinary second half. I thought they played so well second half. And I mean, look, I'm happy with the draw, but that's the second time this season they've been robbed of the opportunity of winning a game. And if they lose the title by 1 or 2 points, I wouldn't want to be around Howard Webb or the
PGMOL. I want to talk to you about the penalty in a minute, Watter. I just think Liverpool here have missed a massive opportunity.
Yeah.
I do. I think they've missed a massive opportunity because Man City, for me, are better than anybody else in the league at just beating everybody else. They'll just go on a run. It wouldn't surprise you, would you, if they won their remaining Premier League
game? That's the problem,
And that's the problem. So when you get the chance to take points off of Man City, you've got to take it. And they were there for the taking, weren't they?
Well, it would have been a four-point gap if they'd won.
A four-point gap. But we've got to talk about the penalty. The penalty shout was massive. As soon as I saw it, Watto, it's a penalty. It's as simple as that. It's a penalty.
Honestly,
what did you think?
Watching live, penalty all day.
Yeah.
Anywhere else on the field, that is a foul and a yellow card. Yeah. I don't understand how it's not been asked to get to the screen and actually, come on, make a decision.
Yeah.
Surely, he's refereeing the game. It's the biggest game of the weekend, potentially one of the biggest games of the season. We're into the 6th, 7th, 8th minutes of injury time. And there's a real contentious decision here. The whole point for me with VAR is go and have a look at it and then make a decision.
Yeah.
You've decided on field nothing, but surely it's worth another look.
It has to be looked at, right? Can I break it down for anybody? Everybody, I'm sure, has seen this already. They've absolutely seen it, okay? But I want to break it down from actually how it all happened. So the ball, it's a corner, the ball drops down. And Doku, at this moment in time, I'm thinking, do not let that ball bounce. Do not let that ball bounce. He let it bounce. And at that point, I'm looking at McAllister and I'm thinking, right, mate, you are going to have to take one for the team here, okay? If you just run full speed into that ball, get the first contact, Jeremy Doku is going to kick you and it's going to be a penalty. It's as simple as that. And McAllister can see it as well. So what McAllister does, he runs and I'm thinking, yes, mate, go on, take one. Even if you get one in the face, just take it in the face, all right? And he goes and he sort of takes one, but not really. He sort of goes, ugh, and turns a little bit, right? Doku, as expected, follows through with a high sort of clearance, sort of half gets the ball, but follows through with the studs into his chest. I just feel that if McAllister would have ran almost face first into it and took one in the face or chest like he would have done, it would have been a guaranteed penalty. The fact that he kind of turned a bit gave the referee a little bit of an out.
You're right, but that's not right, is it? You know, you're right, but he shouldn't have to make it even more of a penalty, should
totally
he?
I agree.
I think you're right, yeah. But his foot's so high.
Yeah, so
you
high.
Know, I thought it looked a penalty in real time. And then when they go back and we see what VAR sees, I'm like, his foot's like really high. It's stood showing.
If I'm a goalie, right? If I'm that goalie and I'm watching that, I'm thinking, Doku, please don't do this. I want it to be a centre back. I want it to be a right back or a left back making that challenge. Because what they'll do is, one, the ball wouldn't have bounced, but secondly, they'd have waited. They'd have been a bit more sort of professional, calm with it, gone and maybe challenged for a 50-50 header or something. But as soon as I see Doku there, I'm thinking, a winger, this is just trouble. It spells trouble.
I think everybody on the field, in a Man City shirt, thought, that's a penalty.
Yeah.
Because they have to get him to look at the screen, don't they? You know what I mean? It's just a shocking, it's a shocking decision. Liverpool, second half, were immense.
Yeah.
And like you said, chance after chance. Obviously, you know, I think it would have been a different game if Aki don't play the back pass short and Edison and all that, because City normally just suck you onto them because they keep possession, Liverpool would be really on the jump trying to get into it. But it put Liverpool right on the front foot and, yeah, they deserve to win the game.
What do you do about it, though? Because, if I mean, look, I'm not Liverpool. I'm a Man United fan, so I don't really want to get passionate about this. But what do you do about it? You're in a title race. You're only 1 point ahead. They've had the Diaz onside goal not given, which would be at least another point. They've had the handball for Odegaard, which at that time in the game makes a bigger difference, and they ended up drawing that game. And then they've had a penalty to win a game.
Yeah.
Man City ain't coming back from it either. It's not like 10 minutes to go. It's not only is it a penalty,
it's 3 points.
It's the last kick of the game. Yeah. If he scores it, you're 4 points clear. I think Man City are out of it. I think if they're 4 points clear, Man City will not close that gap. They are still favourites.
This is the problem with VAR, then. This is why I'm such an advocate for not having VAR. Because if these were all just human errors, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't even remember the Odegaard handball. You wouldn't remember the offside goal that was given and wasn't given. And you wouldn't really... Yesterday, you could see it and you'd go, referee made a decision at least. He decided not to give it a penalty. Cool, we move on. The fact that somebody's had a chance to look at all of these incidents and still decided that they stay what they are. That's the bit that really irks people.
But it's flawed, isn't it? We've spoken about this so many times. And you need to understand the rule and we need to change the rule. Because what happens is, you're Michael Oliver, you don't see it or you've got it wrong.
Yeah.
We're sat here and we go, you've got it wrong. It's a penalty. Mm. You know, it's a stonewall penalty. Anywhere else on the pitch, that's a foul, it's a penalty. You need to come and have a look at it. Why don't they call him over to have a look at it?
Yeah.
Because what they're doing is, Ben's doing his best. It's not clear and obvious.
Yeah, no,
it's not clear and obvious. Even though it is, so they're protecting that. They're not doing their job. This relationship's too close. Yeah. We should just be like, I don't know who you are, especially this VAR. You've got it. You need to look at this.
Yeah.
You've got it wrong. But they're backing him.
Even if you had three people watching that on a panel, went majority rules. Let's just go majority rules on this, okay? All three of us, penalty, yes, no. All right, 2-1 call, penalty. Let's go. Simple as that.
I mean, we've got to look at it. What do you think those referees in the VAR room are looking at to go, all of them, stick with the on-field decision?
I honestly don't know. No. Because anywhere else, it's a foul. But I think Michael Oliver's on the dance floor, he's refereeing the game, he's feeling the game. And do you know what? He might have made a genuine, honest mistake. It's virtually the last action. I'm not going to give a penalty, I'm not sure. But if you flip the coin and he'd have blown and given a penalty, and the two guys at Stockley Park aren't sure, they'd ask him to go have a look at it.
Yeah.
Because the call would have been so big. So if he'd have blown and said penalty and they'd have said, I think you need to check this, because he's not give it, they should still have the same response.
Why is he not having a look at it? You do get called to have a look at it.
Yeah, surely.
I'm just trying to think in my head, because it's such a mess. They do get called to look at it.
They get called to look at it if it's a tight one, if it's a close one. So the fact that he hasn't even been called over to act means that somebody, whoever's in
Stockley,
has gone, no, it's fine. It's not.
I want the audio and I want Howard Webb on this, because I think, I mean, we're always going to have a top 20 of controversial decisions, but that's got to be in there because of the enormity. It's got to be in the top five.
Well, it'll be good to see how this one gets explained away anyway. The debate rages on. I'm sure you'll all be in the comments saying it's a penalty. It wasn't a penalty. No chance. He got the ball first. And we've got to talk about the first goal, the Man City goal. This is straight out of the Dave Watson playbook of set-piece goals, isn't it? Well, it was a thing of beauty, wasn't it?
I absolutely loved it. I think these guys who do the set piece and that, look, they'll look at set pieces from games all over Europe, all across the world, hours and hours spent. You're looking for minute detail to try and expose a situation and something. What you've got for Man City is Kevin De Bruyne can put the ball where you want him to put it.
Quickly as well.
Quickly. But what they've got is, on an outswinger, Liverpool's zonal setup want to be higher.
Yeah.
So you feel as though against a team whose front zone, as in a McAllister, is weak or you can exploit, you're going to get a chance. I did it at Southampton. Everybody said it's the first time they've seen it. So you can get in and have a look.
Dave Watson set piece.
Groundbreaking, Watto.
2 years ago, we did it against Everton. But Livermento...
Go and search this goal, by the way. It's a James Ward-Prowse corner. It's exactly the same.
Same corner, but Livermento, Pickford save.
Goalie makes a save, though.
But it's the same action.
Yeah.
But Richarlison were in the front zone for Everton, yeah. And we set up so all our attackers were here. So they're really thinking on the outswing, and the zones are so high. And again, Richarlison never sees the block coming, and then you make a deep run because the zonal marking, they never follow a run.
Yeah.
Man markers follow runs. Zonal markers never follow a run.
Yeah.
And that's why Nunes let Stones go, because he's not a man marker.
Yeah.
He's a zonal marker. So as soon as they got the block on McAllister at the front and De Bruyne can put the ball in like he put, it's game on.
The thing is, McAllister has to take a lot of responsibility.
He's got to do better.
He has to take a lot of responsibility here. If you're that Liverpool set-piece coach and you're looking at how you defend corners, defend free kicks like that, McAllister's got a big job, yeah? If his job is that front post space, it's a big job, a really big job. You're the first point of contact. You're the one looking to clear it. You cannot let anybody move you out of the way. He wasn't switched on quick enough. He let the ball get played in. He was just sort of like looking around still, really. But when you're that front post guy, you have to be good to go straight away, especially when Kevin De Bruyne is on the ball. Kevin De Bruyne is half looking like, you know what he does? He looks like that as if to say, I'm not doing anything, not doing anything, bang, and it's too late. And it's too late. And that's all it is. It's minute details, but that's the difference between a goal and a not goal.
Bit of a sucker punch for Liverpool because I know they're not the same, but it just made me think about that Trent one against Barcelona.
No,
it's
like
it's the same thing.
Very, very clever.
Yeah, it's details and it's hours and hours of work, but you've kind of got to see it and picture it in your mind that you think you can do it, but then to execute it, and then it's about managers giving you time on the training field. Yeah. So on Friday or Saturday, they would have had 3, 4, maybe half a dozen cracks at that. De Bruyne just getting the time in, working on the block, just coming in on the back of it. But it's managers giving the set-piece coach time because you can come up with all these weird and wonderful ideas, but if you don't practice them on the training pitch, it's never going to happen.
Well, we saw Pep pointing at him, and he's told Gary Neville, so hopefully you're going to get a shout-out on Monday Night Football.
Come on!
We want a bit of love for Watto. Yeah.
Well, we need a bit of love, don't we?
You deserve it as well.
We've got a set-piece named after you there.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Arsenal in a minute. Quickly, before we move on, Watto, I want to get your opinion on the Liverpool goal, the Liverpool penalty. Edison, a bit of an uncharacteristic rush of blood, really. It was a bad ball from Ake, but still, it was kind of... You just knew he was never going to get there, didn't you?
Yeah, I think Aki sold him short for sure, but it doesn't mean to say that you continue with your action.
Yeah, you don't compound it.
You could have, put the brakes on a little bit. Because,
keep him wide, shepherd him.
If you could have just jockeyed him and shepherded him a little bit, you might have got certainly a different outcome. Yeah, he might have crossed it, they might have scored. But I think he just carried on with his own plan.
Yeah.
And it were crazy. And you know yourself, when you get one on there...
Oh, they're sore.
You're coming off. It's
when you open that muscle up, honestly, when you put that leg out and that whole muscle is exposed and something goes... Oh, he could be out for a month or 6 months.
I actually thought
those dead legs are horrible, honestly.
Did well on the penalty because he's going to push off that right leg. Yeah. I thought, go to his right.
Ain't getting that.
And he's probably not going to get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So whether he always were going to go that side, I'm not sure. But that's the side I thought, that's where I'd put it.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to be able to get that push and... It were no surprise he were going to come off, you know.
On goalkeepers, I thought Ortega was brilliant.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
I thought he was absolutely flawless.
Come
into that sort of a game.
All the goalkeepers, yeah. Yesterday, Kelleher, fantastic. Right, yeah. Edison is obviously Edison, but then Kelleher for Liverpool. I love the look of Kelleher. I love it. I love how front-footed he is. The punch. Yeah. Do you see the one in the second half? The punch. He got away with it a little bit, but it's still fantastic front-footed goalkeeping, wanting to get involved in the mix and help his teammates out. I think he's a fantastic goalie. He's just got an Alisson problem in front of him. Right, let's talk about Arsenal then. Snuck it with a kind of last few minutes goal winner from Kai Havertz, who sort of silenced a few of his critics.
Yes, but should he have been on the field to score the winner?
Probably not, Watto. Probably not. And this once again highlights VAR and the usage of it. It was a blatant dive. It would have been a second yellow card. He wouldn't have been on the pitch in the first instance. But Arsenal just sort of going about their business. They keep grinding these wins out. These are the wins that, if you're going to win the title, you have to get, don't you?
Yeah, I'm really pleased for Ramsdale as well because it's such a big error in the first half and he made good saves in the second half. But I was watching that and I knew that the story would be Ramsdale blows the title. That's what would have happened because when you concede at half-time, Thomas Frank's job's easier, isn't it? Because he says, go and do the same thing again in the second half, where if it's 1-0, he's got to open up and Arsenal probably win 2 or 3-0. So it's a massive mistake. So I was pleased Arsenal scored at the end because, I'd rather Arsenal won the league than Liverpool and Man City anyway, but you want it to stay tight.
Yeah.
So I was pleased for Ramsdale that decision didn't cost them. But yeah, you're right. I think Arsenal winning it in the 86th minute is just testament to the improvement year on year that Arteta's putting in and the belief into the team. I felt they were going to score, even though Brentford had the big chances.
And that's the difference with Arsenal this year. I think that they've made an improvement from last year, where their good form was at the start of the season last year, whereas this season they're hitting their good form at the back,
right time,
which is,
yeah,
again, the Sir Alex, the, yeah, Pep, the Klopp thing, isn't it? That's what title winners really do. You play your best football in the second half of the season.
Yeah, Watto, how happy for Aaron were you? Yeah. Obviously, it's a stinking mistake to do, and we're going to break that down again in a minute as well, but some of the saves he made in the second half, big saves, yeah, weren't they?
For me, as a goalie coach, when you see a goalie make a mistake, it's what happens next.
The reaction.
Because, yeah, ultimately, you're going to make a mistake as a goalie. But for him to make the two saves shows his mentality and his character. And actually, when the ball went in the net, you could see his annoyance, his frustration. Yeah. But you could see an inner belief in himself. Right, boom, this is... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He wasn't the shrinking violet. He weren't going inside himself.
Big broad shoulders.
Yeah, get the ball out of the, yeah, net.
The save from Tony...
is incredible.
Again, if you haven't seen this shot, first of all, the shot, the execution from Ivan Toney on half volley, ball over the top, he's running onto it. It's like he doesn't even look at the goal. He's just so aware of his surroundings. His body is all in communication with each other. It's all in sync. And he just waits for this ball to come across him. First time, boom, half volley. It's sailing in the top far corner, right? And somehow Ramsdale, moving his feet backwards, manoeuvring sideways at the same time, managed to get an unbelievable
hand on it. It's an incredible save. And as a goalie coach, I've not worked a save from that position, and I've watched a lot of goalie coaches over the last 18 months while I've not been working so much, and I've never seen anybody do it, because even though goalies are playing so high now, it's just alien to kind of set up a goalkeeping practice
to do it.
Of course,
yeah. You can't replicate that, can you?
But he starts on the 18-yard line, Ramsdale, and he's got to make 6, 7, 8 movements, yeah, back, and then still have the timing and the spring to work off his right and get his right hand up there. It's not an action he would have done. Years and years and years ago, one of my first goalkeeping coaches, Joe Corrigan, we used to do a session where he'd stand on the 6-yard line, you'd run from the goal line, touch the ball, and he'd loop it over. Yeah, yeah. And it was an absolute killer,
burner.
Old school burner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I'm still only working 6 yards back. Aaron's gone 8, 10 yards back and still had the spring,
yeah,
and the awareness, because you're not really knowing the goal is at that point.
If you're switched off, if you're switched off for a split second, there's a goal, it's a goal. It's,
yeah,
as simple as that, it's a goal. But again, we're talking about the minute details.
And I think his mentality, having made that mistake, there was just something inside him that got him to get there quickly, yeah, have the spring, have the agility to make that save. And for a goalie coach, or look, for anybody who's played in goal, you hate seeing goalies make mistakes.
Yeah.
But when they come through them and they have big moments, and then your teammates can actually go on and win you the game, that's what the game's then all about.
Yeah, I felt for him with the goal, because the pass back, it was a decent ball back to him. He's taking the ball across his body, and I'm thinking, just roll it out here. For, I don't know if it was the right back or the right side.
No, Saliba's come level with him.
Yeah, pulled out.
Safe
pass. And it's a real simple pass, but I think the fact that he hasn't been playing games, he's not used to being in that kind of that pressure situation, he just kind of dithered over it a little bit and just went to go long, basically. Just take the elimination, don't worry about the pass, just get rid of the ball. Wisser's rapid anyway, he's going to shut him down. Unfortunately, gets the block, puts it in the back of the net. But I agree with you, it's all about the reaction, how you carry yourself after that. And he was big, broad-shouldered. No, come on, let's do that. And it always helps when your teammate gets you out of the mess in the 86th minute as well.
Interesting to see where he goes, because obviously it's Reyes' position. He's had a fantastic season, but yeah, he's a good goalkeeper, Ramsdale.
What is going to happen with Ramsdale? Where is he going to go?
Well, look, he deserves to be playing in the Premier League, but the ability that he's got, he's not going to want to sign for a lower or mid-table team.
Yeah.
He's going to want to be at the bigger team. Where is the potential to have an opening? Could Chelsea look at him in terms of Sanchez or, yeah, Petrovic at the minute? Would they be looking to maybe change? And would he fancy that kind of thing? That's the kind of club that I think he deserves to be signing,
yeah,
for. But the reality is, where the door actually does open, I'm not so sure.
And it's whether Arsenal even want to sell him in the first place, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, are they going to allow him to go to a real competitor?
It'll be interesting to see. Either way, I hope he goes to the Euros, isn't it?
Euros this summer.
I hope he goes to the Euros in the summer and then gets a move and starts playing first-team football. We all want to see him. Tottenham against Aston Villa. Did not see this one coming.
No,
not see this one coming.
I thought Villa first half was where they lost the game. Actually, I think they had a lot of good breaks on with Watkins, who just had a really bad day.
Yeah.
Like, he's been so good for so long, And they had opportunities where I think they could have worked Spurs better, but it always broke down with the final ball. And then I felt Villa at half time would go on and win it. And then Spurs just hit them with a quick 1-2. The cross for the Madison goal was, yeah. That wasn't the first goal there, was it?
Yeah, Madison's first.
Yeah, Madison, that was, I mean, what a cross. What a cross. Yeah, that is unbelievable. And then they score the second one.
The second goal was sloppy. It's dithering on the ball, isn't it? But it sets the tone for the rest of that.
But we've seen it with Villa loads this season. Like, they're so good at home, but they're not good when they concede. Yeah. Like, Chelsea scored, they didn't come back. Newcastle scored, they didn't come back. And now Spurs. They don't really have much of a reaction when things go wrong. And I'd be worried about that if I was Villa, because obviously Kamara's out, but McGinn's out for three games now. They're playing Thursday night football. And they seem to have a bit of a mental block when they go behind. So I think that, you know, they've got a good cushion. But you'd probably fancy Spurs now with no European football midweek and they've got all their players back. I'd fancy Spurs to probably grab hold of that fourth spot. It's a big, big loss for Villa.
2 points behind Spurs now with a game in hand as well. We've got to talk about the John McGinn red card, though. First of all, is it a red card?
No.
I think it's very soft.
It's a softy one. Oh, I'm glad you said that, lads. I thought you were going to jump straight in and say, yeah, it is a red. I understand why he's given a red card, by the way. I understand it completely. Because he's lost his head, hasn't he?
Again, it had 2 minutes of just chasing and running, and you could see the red mist coming a little bit. But it's not a horror tackle.
Yeah.
It's stupid, and it's a little bit more than a yellow. But if you're reality, it's not a red card.
Yeah, well,
I think the reaction of everybody erupts a situation that's not really there to erupt. He's just had a moment, but he's not lunged in. He's not off the... He's just kicked him.
Yeah. It's one of those ones...
Quite hard, but he kicked him.
It's one of those ones, you know, like we see it in slow-mo and you see the studs going and you go, oh, it's a red because slow-mo makes it a red. Sure. His looks better in slow-mo.
Yeah.
His doesn't look bad in slow-mo. It's just a trick. In real time, his looks worse, which makes me think, well, it's not a red, but I think Watto's right. I think he's got the intent to hurt Adogie. But he hasn't got the tackle to do it.
Yeah,
it's just sort of gone flying in, but tripped him. And, you know, you look at some of the ones over the weekend, like that Brighton one that gets a yellow.
Oh,
how
wow.
That can be not a red, and then that one's not. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's a terrible weekend for officials, isn't it? I think they've just made so many bad decisions.
Yeah, it's kind of an all bark, no bite kind of tackle, isn't it, really?
He wanted to hurt him, but
he didn't really carry it out to that, did he?
He didn't really hurt him.
Massive win for Spurs either way, though. Like I say, 2 points behind with a game in hand now. To your boys, the Red Devils, Mark.
What about them,
early
kickoff.
This is a big win for them, you know. These are games where I was listening to the radio and they always just seem to say, Everton had another chance. And it didn't really look like it was that sort of game, though. So are they kind of just trying to spin it a certain way? But either way, it's a fantastic win for Man United.
I think we're at that point now with United where people have made their mind up on the manager. And a lot of people in the media have made their mind up on the manager. And, you know, I heard it on the radio as well. And I was just like, you're stretching here. This is not your game to sack Ten Hag. We've won 2-0. They were both Stonewall penalties. We should have had another penalty.
Were they deserving of winning the game, United?
Yeah. I mean, look, it wasn't vintage United, nowhere near it. But we've got so many injuries at the moment and there are so many problems. There's almost a fog around Old Trafford at the moment with the stadium, the ownership and the players. There just doesn't seem to be much of an identity. And there's numerous reasons for that. But, I mean, Everton played well, but Everton don't score goals.
Toothless.
I mean, I've never heard Dyche talk about XG so much this year because he knows they're not putting the chances away. But I look at all the chances they had and that's all I saw on Saturday afternoon was just all this talk about Everton chances. But it's quality of chances, isn't it? Like, there was a couple of good shots from Dwight McNeil, but if they'd gone in, you'd have gone, what a finish.
Yeah, well,
there was a cross that Calvert-Lewin might have stretched to, but it wasn't Stonewall go in. I mean, Bruno had the free kick. He had another good save from Pickford in the box. Garnacho put one over the bar. The two penalties, we should have had another penalty. I think, you know, if Everton are going to claim they should have scored 2 or 3, we should have scored 6.
If you look at the stats say that it was a very even game. 50-50% possession, I think... Everton and United had very similar sort of shots on target, shots off target. Everton probably had a few more corners. But again, I agree with you. It's all to do with how you interpret the stats. You know, if they take a P-roller from 40 yards and the goalie just happened, that counts as a shot on target as much as Bruno's from 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 yards. So
well, you two played the game. I mean, at the end of the day, I know United are going to set the game up with Lindelof and Johnny Evans. They can't play high.
Mm.
They're going to play on the edge of the box. Yeah. So if you're in a team that's breaking on a team that's on the edge of the box, you sort of got that momentum, haven't you? Oh, we're running at the edge of the box. The temptation is surely there to start shooting, isn't it?
Yeah,
but the defence is set. It's like, there was a lot of blocks, there was a lot of shots, there was a lot of corners, but there was a line of four there on the edge of the box. They never really got beyond it to create the one-on-ones.
I want to ask you about Garnacho in a minute and just how good he is. But for the two penalties, Watto, again, if you're on that Everton defensive coach and you're looking at some of the... easily they've just given away them penalties, you'd be pulling your hair out.
I think the first one, like Tarkowski, it's just so lazy. He's got him there. He's not going to do anything.
Stand him up. That's what you want. Once you've stood that player up,
Wait. There's no danger. Yeah. And he just puts a leg. It's just crazy. I think the second one's a little bit harder because it's such a good run.
He's moving with the
ball. And Anana makes a crazy recovery run that just takes him across Godfrey just before he comes inside him. Yeah. And I think he probably doesn't see him as... But the two Stonewall penalties, it's just crazy, crazy defending. But the first one really set the tone for him because it's Manu... Go 1-0 up and you've got something. And the way Everton are, they've just, like, they've not won in 11 games since mid-December. And, yeah, thank God for them that they got the 4 points back. But you never know with the rules whether they're going to lose some more. I think it's all playing into Luton's hands at the bottom of the league because an Everton and a Forest don't seem to be getting any momentum to get away from.
Are Everton just missing a striker? As simple as that. Somebody to put the ball in the back of the net. You mentioned XG there and Dyche has been talking about it a lot. But I do feel for him. I really do feel for him. I think they've got one of the highest XGs of most Premier League teams this season. But they just can't put the ball in the back of the net. It's as simple as that.
I think you're right. I think a striker who's got the right sort of movement would benefit from the way Everton play. But I also think as well, it's not just the striker. I think when you look at the three lads behind, they're not making the right choices. Yeah. Like sometimes they're taking a shot and you can see a pass and someone is in one-on-one. Yeah. I think in the final third, they're just lacking that composure. Maybe it's the panic of being down there. I don't know. They're in really good positions and then it's that quality on the final ball.
So come on then, Garnacho, you got man of the match on Saturday. How good is he? How good was he on Saturday? And then how good has he been this season? Is he progressing into the player that we all thought he's going to turn into?
I mean, look, it's slim pickings, but I would say that it's either him or Dalot as Man United's player of the year. And I'd go Garnacho because, I mean, obviously we saw in the first Everton game that wonderful overhead. But look, to be honest, the last couple of games, he's not played well. He hasn't, but he was brilliant at the weekend and he was the difference, those two penalties. He's a match winner. But he is only 19. What he is doing at the moment is, and obviously we've seen it with Rasmus and Mainoo to a certain extent as well, is that for a 19-year-old, you should be being nurtured. You know, you should be the player that everyone's sort of...
You shouldn't be the focal point.
Looking after.
Be the
and
main
he's
man.
Become the focal point because, as we mentioned, Rashford and Bruno and other players... They're really, even Casemiro on Saturday was dreadful. Yeah. So that's another thing I'd praise him for is that, you know, he's almost becoming the focal point, the delivery point of the team at 19. And I think he's having a really good season. And both goals just come from his ability to get the ball and run at people.
He's a match winner, isn't he? Yeah. He's a match winner. That's the
thing. Scary to think what he could become.
That's what United have been brought up on, isn't it? Years and years of the Busby Babe type mentality, George Best, Giggs coming through, all these young attacking players. But they did get cuddled a little bit more than what he's having to be at the moment. But he's the one player, if you go and watch United regularly, that gets you out of your seat at the minute. He's the one player you want him on the ball because you think things can happen. But it's a lot of pressure on a young kid for sure.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the redevelopment of Old Trafford in a minute, Mark, because you know a bit more about it than I do. Before we do, Dyche, Watto, I want to put your brains on this. Dyche said that Everton are going on a little bit of a warm weather training camp now. They haven't got a game for a few weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, I think it is. What actually happens in a warm weather training camp? What is it?
Well, really, it's trying to get the group back together and get a refocus. And obviously, you'll get a little bit more time on the training ground because of the facilities, the environment, the weather allows you to. Obviously, training up on Merseyside, middle of February and March, is not conclusive to standing about and working on a lot of detailed things because if you stop for a while, you're going to be frozen.
You're going to get cold.
Yeah, you're going to get some injuries. So I think it's a reset, get the group back together, and it'll give the coaches and the manager more quality time on the training field.
Yeah, that's the word.
To go into the finer details.
More quality time, a nice bit of vitamin D. You might go out for a nice little meal at night. Like I say, it's 30 degrees, it's absolutely beautiful.
A few pints.
Nah, well, you might be given a one or two nights. Like I say, if Everton haven't got a game for three weeks, they might get one or two nights where they're allowed a few pints, but there won't be any sort of going for it, no chance. The worst thing that could happen from this is all the lads go and have a night out and pictures are taken of them. Everton get relegated at the end of the season. This is why they got relegated. So it won't be anything like that, I can promise you that.
And that used to be the old story, didn't it? Teams would always go away and it used to be really about bonding, recharging. There wouldn't be too much training.
Yeah.
I remember we went away once. We went to Marbella, I think, and we did take some boots and trainers, but they just got left in the bags for 4 days and we just had a...
It's a team bonding.
A team bonding.
A little bit of team bonding.
But I think it's a little bit more professional now.
No carbs before marbs.
Oh, yeah, I like it, yeah. Right, what's happening at Old Trafford then, Mark? Big plans were announced the other day. Sir Jim Ratcliffe, and there's a task force, and Gary Neville's involved, and they're not moving now. They're just going to build on it and spruce it up. What is happening?
To be honest, it's all a bit confusing, because when I reacted to it, I read it that they're going to build next to Old Trafford this big Wembley of the North, and they want government money and... You know, and it makes sense. I mean, it's not Sir Jim Ratcliffe's fault or Gary Neville's fault or any Oss's fault that the Glazers have neglected the stadium for 20 years. It's going to cost a lot of money. And it, ultimately, the blame for whatever happens is on the Glazers because of how they've treated Old Trafford. To build, it's going to cost a lot of money. You look at what happened with West Ham and the Commonwealth Games Stadium with Man City. I think it's quite a clever idea to involve Andy Burnham, who's the mayor of Manchester, and start...
Does this mean they're going to get government funding?
Well, this is what they're trying to do. This is what they're trying to do. And you may as well try it because, you know...
Is that because they're providing like a public service almost?
Well, it's a regeneration of the area. So they're going to say, look, let's put this there, and then we have this massive stadium and you can use it as a second Wembley. So they're trying it on. But the people they've got involved is quite interesting. And look, you know, getting Gary Neville involved is quite interesting because if you go into Manchester these days, you know, the size of the buildings in there, he's been involved in that. So I've got no problem with what they've been put together. The big thing for me is I don't want to move from Old Trafford. Mm. But then you read it and it's almost like, I think one of the council people involved have said, we're so happy that they're staying at Old Trafford. And I'm like, but it doesn't read necessarily that that's what's going to happen. So I suppose it'll become clear over the next 5 to 6 months because I still don't know from what's come out whether we're building a new stadium or we're building on Old Trafford.
The way I kind of saw it or heard it or gauged it was that it's going to be a bit similar to what Tottenham did at White Hart Lane, where they keep a part of the stadium, they build, obviously spruce everything up anyway, but build a newer kind of something and make it a bit similar to that. Because everybody was so happy with the way that White Hart Lane turned out with the new Tottenham stadium, weren't they?
I think the thing for me is that Man United are broke. They've got no money. So what's the best scenario if you need money? Keep Old Trafford until the day you've built the new one and then move over the next day.
Yeah.
Or knock Old Trafford down for 2 years. Where are you going to go for 2 years?
I suspect
we're going to build a new stadium and knock Old Trafford down.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I want Old Trafford renovated. But I'm probably in the minority. A lot of people are really excited about the new stadium.
A complete fresh breakaway.
Yeah, but look, I've been to the Emirates, and whenever I go to the Emirates, I always walk past Highbury, which is not that far away. And I feel more about Highbury than I do about the Emirates. And I'm not an Arsenal fan.
What about all that history at Old Trafford, though? Yeah. You can't just sort of...
Well, that's the hard bit, isn't it? I mean, obviously, Arsenal did it. And obviously, they have to find somewhere to play at home. Tottenham did it. They have to play somewhere.
Wembley,
home
they play
game.
For a bit,
Like, I'm not sure that Man United playing at Man City...
Is going to be
the solution. So, where do you go? There's lots of stadiums around there, but...
Like, lots of fans in London. We could play at Wembley.
Okay.
You could play anywhere in England.
Come and play at Villa Park. It's easier, isn't it?
We'll wait and see what happens with that anyway. Can we quickly talk about Crystal Palace versus Luton at the weekend, lads? I don't know if you've watched the highlights of this one. Right? It's a fantastic result for Luton, and I'm buzzing for them. And the amount of late goals that we're seeing at the minute is phenomenal. 90+6, 90+8, all... But I watched this game, right, well, the highlights specifically anyway, and Crystal Palace absolutely battered Luton. I mean, battered them. They've hit the crossbar twice. Goalie's making saves left, right and centre. Chances getting missed. And then, lo and behold, 98th minute, ball into the box. Fantastic ball by Andros Townsend. Flick on, far post, goal, see you later, we'll take the point. That's football for you, though, isn't it, Watto?
Yeah, that really hurts you. I mean, Palace, I mean, if it were a boxing match, it would
finish
before half-time. Yeah. But I have to say that Luton somehow just kept it at 1-0. As you said, Eze tried the Beckham.
Oh, it was beautiful, wasn't
some
it?
Some effort, just over.
Can we talk about it? That, have you seen this, by the way, Eze? No. So, ball gets played into him. He's running onto it, right? And he's hit it first time, driven it over the goalkeeper. The goalie's got not a chance in hell, right? But he's driven it low. To have the ability, right, and the technique to be able to execute that whilst you're running onto the ball, to be able to keep it low and strike it like that. Honestly, it is so, so difficult.
It just grazes the bar.
It just grazes the top of the bar. The goalkeeper is thanking his lucky star. But Eberechi Eze and Michael Olise, if you can keep them sort of players fit, that's what they offer you, though, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah. No, they were phenomenal, really, not to win a game. I mean, you talk about Dyche looking at stats. If you had the stats for this game, it would blow your brains away. But the reality is, they've got something inside them, Luton. They were just hanging on. And then the one thing that I would say, if I'm being critical of Palace, Townsend's come on, just show him down the line on his right foot. It's a different game. Yeah. He cuts back inside. There's nobody within 5 yards and he puts an unbelievable ball. Midfield runners, they've obviously loaded the box. It's last action of the game. And it's the only way Sam Johnson can be beat. It's a flick. It's an incredible finish.
Yeah.
And it's 1-1, game over. And they've just, I think all the stuff with, I said it earlier, with a Forest and an Everton, it's just giving them a chance somehow.
It's massive. These sort of points, honestly, they're like, it's massive points.
Yeah, and I know, they've lost 3 or 4 on the spot.
I know Luton have given a lot of away late goals away lately, a lot of late goals. But they've been very good at scoring some late goals themselves as well. I think only Liverpool or something have got more late goals
from the
75th minute. And that is the sort of character, that is the sort of determination that can get you safe, you know. Mm. So fair play to them. I don't know if you've seen this. We've got the quiz in a minute. We've got the quiz in a second. But we've just got to talk about one of my old clubs, Watford. And one of my old teammates as well. Valerian Ismail got sacked at the weekend after a disappointing loss to Coventry, and Tom Cleverley has been given the reins. He was the under-18s coach, been given it on an interim basis till the end of, maybe till the
so,
end of the season.
So if you get the old phone call, mate, are you going to get tempted to get the old coaching boots on?
No chance on this earth. But it's crazy. Tom Cleverley, 34 years old, you know, and you know, Cleves is an impressive man. Honestly, he's a very impressive man. He's been on the Fozcast. Absolutely love the guy. I think it will suit him down to the ground there, but it's you know, that's
slightly
modern football.
Coaching a team that's expected to do a lot of good things in the Championship from
is it? What's that? What's that like? What's that like coming from the under-18s and getting frustrated into the first team?
I think because he's obviously been at the club a long time.
Yeah.
Players will know he's played for the club and they'll know his history.
So the respect, they'll have a bit of respect.
I think it gives you a little bit of grace. But the one thing I would say is players are brutal. Mm. And when Tom Cleverley steps on that grass for his first training session, it needs to be spot on.
Yeah.
Because players will try and see a weakness within you. They'll respect his career and what he's been and what he's had, but you're a coach now. That first session has to be a very, very good session. And if you've had a meeting before and you're going to talk about detail, your detail's got to be spot on, because players will not give you the grace, irrespective of what you've done in the past. You're now stepping in to be a coach, a manager. It's different. They'll respect you, but you'll earn more respect by getting the detail right in the meetings and getting the session right on the grass. And if he can do that, his background would allow him. He knows football and he'll have a chance. But I think at the minute it's more about man management, getting the players on board.
Yeah.
To get a chance.
The problem that he's got at Watford is that they're kind of in a bit of no man's land, really. It's very doubtful they'll get dragged into a relegation fight, even though it is fairly tight at the bottom of the Championship. So they haven't got too much to play for. So in fairness to Tom, it might be a bit of a free hit. Like I say, he's an impressive man. I think he'll do a fantastic job. So yeah, we wish the best for Tom Cleverley. It's the quiz time, lads.
You go. I need a win.
Do you?
Let's go.
Let's go then. Right, Jamie, you're back on screen today because you haven't had a heavy... That was a tongue twister, by the way. You haven't had a heavy weekend. You haven't had a heavy weekend in Hungary and you're ready with 10 belting quiz questions, aren't you?
We are indeed.
We're good to go?
And a tiebreaker if we get...
If required!
Yes.
Come on, Joe.
Come on, then.
Are we ready? Question one. Which player did Manchester City sign from Rennes for 55.5 million?
Alvarez.
5.5 million. No.
Just a guess, mate. I had to pull one.
Doku is the correct answer.
Oh, my God.
I was really struggling with that. I was like going through. I was a guess as well. I just thought.
Never mind.
Let's get that, mate. Yeah.
1-0. Question two. Which club are known as the Millers?
Rotherham.
Rotherham. Get in. Ben.
Get in. They are struggling, by the way, Rotherham. They are adrift and they are getting pumped every week. Poor lads.
Yeah. Question three. Can you name one of the three Northern Irish players who have played this season?
Johnny Evans.
Johnny Evans is correct.
For who, though?
Just played. Just played basketball?
Mark Allen. Snooker.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Rory McIlroy?
I knew what you meant. I knew what you meant.
It's a football quiz.
Seriously?
It's a football quiz.
Jesus.
It's a football quiz.
Oh, the Corps, no, they're Southern Ireland.
J.
You had Oliver Norwood, Johnny Evans and Conor Bradley are the only three Northern
Irish. Conor Bradley's Northern Irish?
Yep.
Oh, I wish he was English.
Northern Irish.
Yeah, he is Irish. Yeah, good one, that, Bradley. Okay.
I wouldn't have got that one.
Question four. Career path question. I have played for Manchester United, Preston North End loan.
Beckham.
No. Sunderland loan, Arsenal, Watford and Brighton.
I know who it is.
Danny Welbeck is the correct answer.
I didn't know when I learned to Preston.
I didn't know Preston. I would have gone. I thought you had it with Beckham, both of you.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's too easy. It's too obvious.
We're making a mess of it, aren't we? Oh, no, certainly.
These questions are too.
Well, you're not doing that.
They've got 3-1 now.
Levers.
Question five. Who is Brighton's most expensive signing of all time?
Was it that Pedro?
João Pedro is the correct answer. Ooh. 30 million.
4-1-0. This is like when, I don't know what it is.
Somebody beat somebody heavily.
Yeah.
What's the score?
4-1-0.
Oh, wow.
It's not looking good.
Question six. Oh. Who am I?
Jamie.
Correct.
Got it, yes.
These questions.
Honestly.
Question six.
That's not a football question.
Yeah, we know it's a who am I. Go on, just go straight into the who am I.
I have only played in three different leagues and I have a younger brother playing for Sunderland.
Bellingham.
Finally, my shirt has been retired at my first club. Jude Bellingham. That's the correct answer.
4-2-0.
4-2-0. Four questions left. Question seven.
I've got a Johnson.
Fernando Torres has played how many different Premier League clubs?
Two.
Got it.
Chelsea, Liverpool, wow.
Off the mark.
Thanks, Jake.
That was just like a resign too.
It was nothing, you just knew. Question eight. At what club were Joe Cole and Eden Hazard teammates?
Chelsea.
Marseille.
No and no.
What?
Eden Hazard and I would say...
Joe Cole
played for West Ham, Chelsea... Liverpool.
I've got it.
Lille.
Lille was the correct
answer. Oh. That's who I meant.
You nearly threw me that.
He went to France for a little bit.
Who did you say?
You sure it's not Marseille?
It's not Marseille. I'm sorry. It's not Marseille.
Oh, I need to resign here, mate. Give you a chance. It's all.
I know. Why are you getting the little two for Torres? Right. Just give me a nudge.
Question nine. Manager career path. I have managed Chelsea reserves, Watford, Reading, Swansea, Liverpool.
Brendan Rodgers.
No.
Brendan Rodgers is the correct answer. Celtic, let's see. I'm back to Celtic.
Oh, dear.
Final question. We could double it up
and still not do all.
Yep.
Who was Brentford's previous manager before Thomas Frank?
Oh, wow, that's a good question.
Dean Smith.
Well done. Answer. Wait, does that mean what? I was left
five,
with?
5-3-2.
Who was the manager before Dean Smith?
I don't know. Don't know anything about Brentford, really.
Who is it, Tom?
Was it Mark Walton?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly. Well, give us a tiebreaker just in case.
You want a tiebreaker?
Yeah, because everybody loves the questions, don't they?
Yeah, of course.
Because they're your questions.
Thanks. Question 11. So everyone's in this, yeah?
Yeah, of course. It's just a bit of fun, Jay.
Emil Heskey started his career at what club?
Leicester.
Leicester's the correct answer.
I should get 2 points for that.
Played at Filbert Street, didn't he?
He did,
bagged a few.
There you go.
Mark is the winner.
Thank you very much.
Well done, Mark.
Back in it. Two in a row.
Hold on, look at the scoreboard.
That brings you level with me on 9 points.
That's because you had a load of weeks when I wanted you.
Well, that's your own fault. It's your own fault. I hope you enjoyed the show, everybody. And if you are listening to us on Spotify, you can watch us as well, you know, like on your phone and laptop and stuff.
Yeah,
it's like technology, isn't it? It's incredible. And we are out tomorrow on YouTube as well. We'll see you
next time. You know as well, just very quickly, you can, if you blow on your screen, it will just play as well.
Blow what?
Just go like that. And it plays.
Yeah. Try it. He's lying. See you soon.